trust your creativity. Trust that nascent urge, that inborn talent. Trust that the clients will be there, and trust that the money will be there, and trust that. And now the situation I'm in now is I'm trying to do forward thinking, futuristic stuff, important work, and I have to trust that my audience is going to be there.
Welcome to the Creative Chats Podcast with Mike Brennan. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Creative Chats. I am your host, Mike Brennan, and this is the podcast where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. And I love to unpack these things mostly with my guests and explore how we can apply these things to our own creative processes and journeys. Now, I would love to also invite you to subscribe to the Daily Creative Habit email newsletter. Nobody needs more emails, I get that. But this email that I send out once a week is packed with some inspiration, some resources. I give daily creative prompts for you if you're looking for something to get you out of the rut, to kind of get the juices flowing. Perfect for you. Also, we have a community over on Facebook that is called Daily Creative Habit as well. And I would love for you just to be taking a step to be a part of that community. Come around people who are like-minded, raising their hands to say, I want to show up more consistently for my creativity and craft. So if that's you, head on over to dailycreativehabit.com and you'll find all those resources there. Hey, I'd also love to invite you to check out my book, Make Fun a Habit. It's the creative playbook for making life and work fun again. If you have felt like fun has up and left the building somewhere along the way, I think we all do at some point, you find yourself centering around some practicality and responsibility and all the adulting words. If you need a little bit more fun in your life, in your work, in your experience, then I want to invite you to grab a copy of my book. It's 30 short chapters that give you some inspiration, some practical application, and exercises so that you can start to experience some more fun in and around your life. Go to makefunahabit.com and grab your copy today. Hey, so today is one of those episodes where it's probably a little bit more self-indulgent. I'm going to be honest. I was able to have a conversation with a design hero of mine, James Victory. And you're going to love James if you're not familiar with him already. I mean, the guy is just incredible in his just creative thinking, his process, his work. I mean, he's had work hanging in museums. He's worked with major brands. But beyond that, beyond the clientele and the accolades, when you get down to it, and you'll hear this in the conversation I have with James, he is someone who is just pursuing with a passion being authentic in the work that we do as creative people. And he is just a creative rebel because he's tired of all the things that people say. You have to jump through these hoops if you want to succeed. You have to conform to these things. And it's not simply just about, thumbing your nose at something because it's the system, but rather James has really identified that there are things we need to deal with internally as people, not just creative people, but as people, and to walk that road where we figure out the thing that lights us up. He says that our work is a gift, and I truly believe that as well. And we unpack what that looks like for him and for the people that he helps and the clients he serves. So without further ado, here is my amazing creative chat with the one and only James Victory. Well, James, welcome to the Creative Chats podcast. I am so thrilled to have you here today.
Hey, Mike, I am happy to be here. I'm happy to be here. I love what I do and I love sharing it.
Yeah. You know, you're somebody who, when I look at the work that you've done and just that you continue to do, how you push into new territories, I just get inspired by you and how you just marry your creativity, your curiosity, and your brute force to move forward and do some incredible stuff. I know in the past you've been on podcasts where you shared like childhood things and kind of your story coming up and so on. I won't put you through going through those paces again, but I would love to start in the place of just asking you, like, how do you think that your past prepared you for your present?
No, you don't want to put me through my childhood trauma again. How did my past prepare me for my present? You know, I think I mentioned it in, I think it was Fec Perfection that, I am who I am because of, and in spite of my past, my upbringing. And I think that's important for all of us to know. I think it's important creatively for us to kind of know who we are and where we come from and the contribution that that our past and our history makes. Because if you're not pulling from that, if you're not using that, and that was one of the things that I hit hard when I was teaching at SVA, is if you're not pulling from your story, you know, in the particular lies the universal. That means the things that I love and the things that I fear are the things that you love and the things that you fear. And if I can be authentic and vulnerable and personal in my story, then it will have meaning for other people. So in order to do that, you kind of have to tell the truth. You kind of have to go back and, you know, and see where you came from. And one of my, you know, I won't go through the whole childhood thing, but I think one of the things that's really important that a story that I like telling is I remember my very first memory, right? It was an image that would come up occasionally, and I questioned it once, and it was a pool of melted crayons. So it was this like melange of color, right? Melted on a concrete porch. And I thought, well, shit, that must have been when we lived in New Mexico. And I was like 4 or 5, because we weren't there that long. It was a military family, so we moved around a lot. So eventually, like just a couple of years ago, I asked my mom. I said, you know what? I've got this memory of a pool of melted crayons on a hot porch. And she says, oh, I remember that. And it was kind of the way she remembered it. The way she remembered it felt like this. This is not our house. Who's going to clean that up? We're going to get charged for that. For me, two things. One, that pool of melted crayons, the way the color works together and that schmear, right? My work aspires to that today. I mean, even if I'm working with a pencil or a pen or, you know, or a Sharpie pen, I'm looking for that gestalt. I'm looking for that life. I'm looking for that unexpectedness, that accident, that messy mistake. But I think also the way, you know, so that's the creative side. Then there's the rebel. Then there's me personally and how I would use trauma or events in my life. And I think the way that my mom remembered it is also, quite frankly, super important to me, because I found that through an action either I made accidentally or my sister made or whatever, you could elicit a very strong response. And I think that's something I want all the time too. I'm always shooting for the heart or the groin, you know? So I think that is as one story to encapsulate a lot. I think that's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I love that the visual of the crayons melting together and just that, I can almost smell it too, right? Like the visceral type
or,
of thing.
You know, or taste it depending how old you are. No, you're, and you're a color guy. You get it. I think everybody listening can have that beautiful visual in their head as well.
Yeah. So in terms of, like, even as you examine past and you look at the future and you're sitting in the present doing the things you're doing now, I would love to ask you about the role of evolution in your life, right? So, like, even as a creative person, you know, you have an entry point at which you're doing certain creative activities. And then as life goes on, you know, you start to change as a person, you start to evolve, you start to have maybe some interests, you start to have some clarity. Like, can you walk through a little bit of, like, what did that look like for you? And what does the role of evolution play for you?
Great question, Mike. I was born to do this. Like the pool of crayon thing, that just stick, that mm-hmm. stuck. That was with me. I was born to do this job. And I don't know. I'm trying to figure out how to encapsulate it, how to write a book about holding on to your creativity. I mean, it's actually in the works, but how to do that? Because it's so easily, we leave it behind. You know, in the first line in Effect Perfection says, we are all born wildly creative, but some of us just forgot, yeah. right? For me, I was born wildly creative. I was full of wordplay and I drew on everything. And I drew, you know, my creativity was not condoned at school. Certainly not condoned in a military household. I was referred to as creative and I knew it wasn't a compliment. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I held on to it. But I then in high school, you kind of get like, well, you have to have a career path and you have to choose mm-hmm. a job. So I got stuck on that and I wanted to go. I was actually an alternate for the military academy. Thank God I didn't get in. But I went down this path for a little while of trying to go to university and try to, you know, do something that involved math where I was just way in over my head. And I think thankfully failed at that. And that failure led me back to me. It led me back to like drawing and making. And serendipitously, I found a tiny little design studio in my hometown. And the guy there, his name was Pat Donahoe. He took me in and helped me put together a portfolio to go to art school. And I was like, okay, that's my path. And then I got in art school and I started learning a lot of rules. I started learning. Like I think the way art school and design schools are done these days is still very 1970s. It's such bullshit. I would change the whole fucking system. I really, really would. People learn the tools outside of school. They don't need school for that shit. They need to learn who they are. They need to learn how to that treasure trove of history that you're referring to, mm-hmm. right? So I got out of school and actually I was asked to leave art school. So here's my second university failure. I was taken aside and told that the field was very competitive and maybe I should become a golf pro or a CPA or something, right? Something reasonable, something mm-hmm. sensible. You know, and of course my parents wanted me to do something sensible, right? Right? The worst thing a creative person can do. But I started literally 3 weeks out of school, I started putting together book jackets. Because I knew in New York there was ample work doing freelance book jacket design. My mother worked in the reference department of the university library, so I was around books my whole life. I actually wanted to be a writer when I was a kid. So I started designing book jackets, but I was going into the bookstore and going, what do books look like? I guess they look like that. I started this thing that most designers stay in their entire fucking career, and it drives me crazy. Where they make the obvious look obviouser. Mm. Everything's got a precedent. Everything's got a reference. Looks like an old Tool logo from the 80s, or it looks like this. But you know, I'm riffing on the Barbie logo, or I'm riffing on. No, don't fucking riff on this shit. Just make something up. Do something of yours, right? So, I was making book jackets look like book jackets until I was like a year into it, year and a half into it, and I was making. Coin. I was making good money. I bought my first motorcycle cash. And I started going, hey, wait a minute. I've got my own opinion. I've got my own sense of humor, my own sense of design, my own sense of color and contrast and space and form. And I started employing that in my work. I started putting it in my work. And I was working for all the big publishers in New York. And most of them dropped me. Most of the creative directors were like, you know, I literally had my very first creative director was this wonderful guy. His name was Joseph Montebello. He was the art director, the creative director for Harper and Row. It was Harper and Row mm-hmm. then. It's Harper Collins, I think. But wonderful guy. But he even literally, he got tired of me. Like I was bringing in, I was really pushing and they were beautiful and they were great and they were funny and they were charming and they were me. And he said, James, if you bring in one more cover that gets killed, I'll never work with you again. And I was like, okay. And I did. And I never worked with them again. And what happened when everybody started, when I was living on kill fees for this period, and I was 20, 21, right? So I didn't, you know, who cares? You know, I didn't have a wife and kid and all that stuff to support. Mm-hmm. I did the only sensible thing, and I stuck to my fucking guns. And I said, you know what? I got an opinion. This stuff is good. You don't like it, somebody else will. And I went and I found my clients. And that made all the difference in the world. People who allowed, who wanted that level of creativity. Mm. So I think that as far as the journey is, that's the thing. And that's where I still am. I have been blessed with the most amazing clients on the planet. You know, who would have thought? I would have never thought to work in the cosmetics industry, but there I am working for Aveda and Bobby Brown. I would have never thought I would be working in fashion, but there I am doing marketing and all the advertising and all the stuff for Yoji Yamamoto for his men's line. And he's like, hey, I want a line of t-shirts. Dude, you know, just wonderful stuff. And he was the only client that I worked with who would constantly say, do you got more? Can it be more creative? More? I'm like, oh my God. I was so... You never hear of a client saying that, do right. you? Never.
Yeah.
James, I think you got more in you. Can we get it? I want, you know, it's just like more cowbell. I'm like, not the fuck. So I think that kind of thing happens when you trust. Hmm. Really. Trust your creativity. Trust that nascent urge, that inborn talent. Trust that the clients will be there, and trust that the money will be there, and trust that. And now the situation I'm in now is I'm trying to do forward thinking, futuristic stuff, important work. And I have to trust that my audience is going to be there.
Mm, yeah.
And that's hard for us. It's hard because you're like, but what if all the what ifs?
Exactly. Yeah. How do you, along those lines, right? How do you pour into yourself to be able to trust yourself enough where you don't feel like, because if you're looking at external factors, right, you're looking at, okay, the path forward is not revealing itself, right? I'm getting closed doors. It seems to be people not receiving what it is that I'm doing. And in that moment, it's either like I'm doubting what I'm doing, I'm doubting myself and thinking, well, I got to do something different because this isn't working. Or you double down and you go, well, like in your case, this is who I am. This is what I'm going to embrace, and I need to trust that. How do you coach somebody else into embracing that trust?
Yeah. And that's what I do. A big part of my job now is that, as coaching. I've become the creative director's creative director. I literally have creative directors from top companies coming to me, and they say, hey, I'm 35, I'm 40, I've got the wife, I've got the kid, I've got the great job that everybody wants me. And they're like, and I'm bored, or I'm stuck. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, let's go. Let's figure this out. Let's do this. And actually, Mike, it's funny because I've got this weekly podcast, and it's called The Right Questions, right? Because we're good at answering questions. And what I'm good at is finding the right question within that question. Here's what you really want to know, or here's what you really don't want to find out. So to answer your question, we just today got a question from a wonderful creative soul on the podcast. And I know a lot of the people there because it's a little closed community. He's a leather maker. So he makes leather goods, and he has been supporting himself by making what he calls trinkets. You know, he makes keychains and dog collars and stuff like that. Speaking of which, there's my one of our little things. And he's like, that keeps the lights on. Mm-hmm. He says, but I want to make handbags, and I'm so torn. And his name is Daniel, and I said, so I'm crafting the answer. And the answer is kind of like this. There's two answers for you. I could be your mom, and I could say, you know what? The trinkets are keeping the lights on. figure out how to make yourself happy with the other thing at night, you know, like your side gig or whatever. But what I would be doing, is protecting him. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we got to eat, dude. We got to eat. And I know he's got a dog. You got to feed the dog. I mean, you know, we got to keep the lights on. I know it's practical, reasonable, and responsible. Mm-hmm. So I could be like your mom, but all I'm going to be doing is protecting that part of you, but I'm shielding you from success. Mm. I'm shielding you from opportunity and chance and risk. Right. And if you do choose to like turn the volume down on the handbags and back up on the shit you don't want to be doing, you're going to come back to me in 6 months with the same question. And that fire is still going to be burning inside. You're still going to be frustrated, right? Like, yeah. Like, so here's the real answer. Go for it. Go for it. And let's figure out how to do it correctly. Meaning, who are you making them for? What's the story? What's your origin story? What makes it, what makes these better? What, you know, where do you see them? What's the beautiful picture? Let's figure out, you know, how to make that happen. Hmm. Right. So I don't want anybody to quit their day job, but I can teach people to turn the volume down on that and turn the volume up on their passion.
Yeah.
You know, because if you don't follow through with it, you know, it quite frankly, like, creativity is inside of us for a purpose. And one of its purposes is to pay its fucking rent. Right. Because if we don't use it, and if we're not employing it in our life regularly, allowing it to flow, it's mm-hmm. constricting, and it's going to cause all kinds of mess, right? It's going to cause frustration. It's going to cause stress. It's going to cause chronic stress, which can lead to disease and, you know, over drinking and overweight and blah, blah, blah. And so, it's a health concern, Mike.
No, I totally get that. And you know what?
I'm in the mental health industry.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that, you know, I've experienced that myself, because part of my story is, you know, I got burned out on design and I just threw the whole thing away because I was like, this isn't working. But I threw the whole thing away. Even for me personally, I did no art, no real creative things for about 10 years, ended mm-hmm. up suffering from depression. But depression was the catalyst to bring me back to my art, to a deeper level of like, okay, how do I really own this? Who am I in this? Why am I doing this? Like the discovery pieces, right? So sometimes I think that can actually be, even though on the front end it looks like, oh, this is going sideways or this is on fire, it actually becomes the thing that can deliver us into a deeper level where we actually own something. Yeah. We actually know something for sure, you know? Yeah. So I'm glad you touched on that.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So just curious too, like as you're meeting with people, as you're coaching people, I know you do these retreats too, right? What does some of that look like? If someone comes to you and they're coming to this retreat, what does somebody experience and what can they expect?
What they can expect is kind of like going back to college and going back to art school. It's as well as boot camp. It's like really kind of just breaking people down to like become much more honest, because they'll sit in a room with 10 other people and everybody is just like, on the first night, everybody's just sharing their story. And there's this instant community created by these creative frustration. You know, it's just like when you meet somebody and you're like, oh, you're weird. I'm weird too. You know, let's be friends. But really try to, it's exhausting for everybody because it's really getting them to shed layers and to unearth, you know? And if I have people who are in the creative industry, if I have designers here, the funny thing is I'm like, okay, first thing, no designers are allowed. You can't be a designer here, because designers all think alike. We're concerned with type and color and all these things. And I want you. It's all I want. You know, I had one guy who came to a workshop. I mean, he's a lifelong, you know, lifelong mentorship program now. But he, He came and he was running a design program at a university. And he said, after, he said, you know, I thought I was going to come to become a better designer. And he says, and I realized I've become a better person. Because it's all about just like allowing ourselves to be ourselves, you know? So I've got, and big part of the workshops is this. I have two little ones. I've got a 6-year-old girl and a 9-year-old boy. And as a single dad, what I experience a lot, and I know why parents shut this down, because it's completely annoying, right? Which is part of where a lot of our creativity exits us, you know, through this process, is I get this all the time. And this is now for me a huge signifier for creative professionals, because we can't do it. And it is an inborn creative urge. And it goes like this: Daddy, look at me. Look what I can do. Right? Daddy, look what I did. And they just want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And they want to be appreciated for what they've done. And I have to do it. I might be going, hey guys, I'm doing the fucking dishes. I can't beat it. But when I'm done, I'm come over and go, okay, show me. Tell me what you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Because that's all everybody on the planet wants. We want to be seen, we want to be heard, and we want to be loved or appreciated. And a lot of people at work are frustrated because they don't have the appreciated part. Or they're paid well, so they're appreciated, but they're not really seen and they're not heard. They're not being allowed to express.
Yeah.
Right. And I have to keep giving my kids the gift of allowing themselves to be heard. Right. Because if it gets shut down now, it'll be shut down forever. Mm-hmm. You know, because as professionals, a big part of what we do, like my leather guy, he's going to have to get out in the world and go, hey, look at me, look what I can do. And that will make the difference.
Yeah.
You know, if you build a better mousetrap, the world will beat a path to your door. Nah, not if they don't know it exists. Not if you're not talking about it. Right. And yeah. Now in this economy, this attention economy, now people have to hear about your rat trap, you know, 23 times before they buy it. Right.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So, you know, so there's a lot of things that are in the process of having this wealth and getting it out to the world, and you know, allowing yourself to express it is one, and consistency is the next, right? Mm-hmm. Just consistently showing up and presenting the work and talking about it, you know, and I have to do that now because I do a certain amount of marketing for my stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, if I have to talk about my coaching program one more time. And I'm like, when I feel like that, then I know that people are probably starting to go, oh, hey, James Victoria, that would be amazing. Yeah. You know?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. You know, you talked before too about, just future and some of the things you're thinking about and trying to get people to make sure that you're meeting where your audience is at. Is there anything that you can think of that you're like, this is something I would love to do that I haven't done yet? Some ground to take that I haven't taken yet.
Yes. I was actually just thinking about something recently and this morning. And you know, So I started as a book jacket designer, but I didn't really want to be a book jacket designer. I moved to New York to become a poster designer. And that's where the strong body of my work is in posters. And there's one untapped outlet for me, not for me, but that I need to pursue. And I would like to make, motivational, inspirational, educational posters for kids in schools, because I think the glut of the work that's out there for them is shit. You know, Paw Patrol, and it says something quirky underneath Like, oh, fuck
or the guys. Kitten hanging upside down, hang in what, there, right?
Whatever, you know. So I did a series. I did for a client, for a real client, and a real client. I did a series of motivational and inspirational posters for the Department of Probation in New York City, and the effect was astounding. The change was amazing. The commissioner who got me involved in the thing said he'd hang out at, you know, at one of the probation centers, and he'd see the parolees, and they're looking at they're looking at the poster, and they're reading the little text, and they look up and they go, that's what I think. And again, it's the in the particular lies the universal. If I can just be honest and speak to this client in with honesty and vulnerability, because they've probably never been spoken to like that before, or never been treated that well before. If I can come off as the stern, cool, fun dad, you know, but if I just show the picture of Martin Luther King and say, I have a dream, it's just like, oh yeah, I have a dream. You know, I get it. That was cool. You know? Yeah. But if you can add some level of, I mean, not to MLK, I wouldn't dream of changing that, but, you know, yes, take the hot air balloon bullshit, like aspire, right? Or dream, and make it real so people can relate to it. And I think kids are a much better audience. The only problem with this idea is that the gatekeepers between me and the kids have their head in a bucket. You know, they're like, oh, you can't say that. Oh, you shouldn't do that. Oh, the kids want to, like, oh, bad.
No.
So yeah, I just want them. I, Mike, I've always loved making, and that was the fun thing about living in New York, was like, I love making work that people see. Mm-hmm. Make work that goes out in the street that people see. That blows my skirt up.
Nice. Well, you've been talking about, you know, a bunch of different ways that people can get in touch with you or take advantage of coaching, take advantage of these retreats or any number of things, the podcast. Can you tell us, like, where can people go to find you to find some of these things and make sure they're following along?
Probably the home plate is my Instagram, which is just my name, James Victory. And then that will lead you to, because that's the place where I play and I try new ideas and I put up little sketches and people go, oh, that's awesome. And I'm like, okay, let me think about that. Or I practice writing. But that's kind of the hub is my Instagram, and that will go to my website.
Okay. And your website is,
actually the website is, I changed it a couple of years ago because here's the thing. I'm a pretty good designer, meaning I can get my work into most museums around the world. I've had two shows at the MoMA in New York, but I'm a much better teacher. And one of the ideas that came up when I was working on my book on Effect Perfection was this idea that your work is a gift. Because if you can think about your work as a gift and not like a chore or not like something you do for a job or something you do for money, or it changes how you think about the work, and it changes who you work for, and it changes what your intention is. And now your intention is to give a part of yourself, right? Because that's where the value is. So my website is actually called yourworkisagift.com.
Love it. Absolutely love it. James, thank you so much for just carving out this time today, for meeting with me and talking to the audience here. And, I don't know if you get this a lot, because I know you're pouring out, you're helping other people, and you're calling them to great things. And so I don't know how much encouragement you may get on a daily basis, but I just want to encourage you today right now and say your work is a gift. The way that you show up, the way that you see things, the way that you engage with people, and how you push people to become better. And you're not concerned with a lot of the trappings and the systems that seem to squash things. Thank you for that. Thank you for your voice. Thank you for your diligence. Thank you for the work that people don't even realize that you put into things that may seem easy or intuitive for you, but that you have to work hard at. Thank you for all of that, James.
Wow, I appreciate that, Mike. Thank you. You're going to make me cry.
Well, absolutely. You know, I truly mean it. Because even the bit that I have come in contact with you, it has profoundly impacted me. And I know others, if they haven't, this is their first experience of hearing you, they're going to go find more about you and they're going to experience the same. So thank you again.
Beautiful. I appreciate it. Thank you for your time. I appreciate you offering to have me here.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.